Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Hey, Andrew. I kind of hit that off-season lull, not to be confused with Sergio Yule. I don't really have a lot going on over here this week. I kind of am looking for things to do. So I reorganized my closet. All the polo shirts are now color coordinated, the whites, then the blues, and the grays, and so forth. And I'm assuming life's a little bit different over there.
It's a little bit different. I'm really impressed with your Sergio Yule pull to open up our FIBA preview today. Let's just
deep cut.
Put everyone in the mood. Sergio Yule. Is it Yule?
I think it's Yule.
Okay. Yeah. Well, swingman for Spain. Spain looked awesome last night. I was at Spain, Argentina. I don't know, man. So, like, if summer's getting slow, that's the perfect time for you to be getting into this FIBA.
Yeah, it is. I've been watching a lot of the games, and, you know, I've typically went straight to meltdown mode, very similar to my Warriors coverage during the postseason. It took me about three games to start getting frustrated with the United States, and then by the end of the first round, I was pulling my very limited hair out of my head. And I'm not saying that I am worried that they're going to lose or nervous or whatever those phrases might be, you know, kind of bouncing around the internet, but they don't look very good at all. And they're not fun. And when the best thing we have is Kyrie Irving, like falling out of bounds to throw a half court alley-oop, that's not great.
Yeah. So let's go through it all today. We've got the quarterfinals start tomorrow. I'm going to USA basketball practice in about 45 minutes, so we're going to have to just fit as much as we can in.
So they're actually going to practice, because I swear I've gotten like 19 emails over the last month saying practice is canceled. And it kind of shows on the court, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know what? They canceled practice on Saturday, and I was really excited, because like me and a couple of the other people down here were angling for ways to get to Brazil, Argentina, and Brazil, Argentina was so much better than USA basketball practice would have been. That's actually my experience so far with the Olympic basketball, is that the games that don't involve the US are all a lot of fun. That, like, the flow of the game is great. Everything, like, the fans are fantastic. It's the games with the Americans that have been a little tough.
The one thing I think it could change, though, now that we're getting to the quarterfinals, because I think the teams that are about to play have a shot to press them, right? And don't you think those games are going to be more entertaining once the crowd rallies around the underdogs? Because I can just see that kind of opening up. Like, this is not a super lovable USA team. Kevin Durant's just rotting on the wing. You got a lot of one-on-one individual pounding, no Steph Curry, no LeBron James to kind of win people over. I feel like if there's a team up on the USA in the second half, everybody locally there is going to, you know, ride the underdog, don't you think?
Definitely. I mean, they've got Argentina. What time do they play? Argentina is Wednesday. Wednesday at, I guess, 6 o'clock East Coast, 3 o'clock Golliver time.
Yeah, I think it's 5:30.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's going to be, like, the Argentinian fans have been far and away the best fans in Rio. Easily the craziest. I talked to a stadium worker the other night who was telling me, like, he had, like, who's, like, basically a college kid who is volunteering from Madison, Wisconsin. And he was like, yeah, like, the Argentinians were in this restricted area and we had no idea what to do. And we talked to the National Guard, who is at every game. They've got these, like, soldiers, and the soldiers were like, we're not going to deal with them. So, like, unless they get into a fight, don't talk to us. And so, like, they're just the rowdiest fans at every single venue. So, like, throw them in the mix against the Americans. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, that game against Brazil was nuts. So, was that one of the best games you've ever attended in person, or did it not kind of qualify because there wasn't really gigantic stakes? Like, it wasn't for a medal, but still, it's like the biggest national pride game, really, you can imagine.
Yeah, it was definitely up there in terms of stuff I've seen in person. I mean, like, Andres Nocioni coming out of nowhere with 37. Did you see the game?
Oh, yeah. So on that 1-3, he just called rim, 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 rim.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Literally hit every part of the rim. And then their little point guard is Campazzo.
Oh yeah, he's unstoppable. And were you in the camp who was thinking that why is Manu taking that one potential game winner after Campazzo's just been all over the court doing everything? It was kind of annoying. Manu was just struggled down the stretch of that game, I thought. I don't know why he inserted himself there on that final possession. His jumper was pretty off. But,
well, you got to trust Manu.
I don't know. I ride the hot ourselves. Hand. That guy was unstoppable.
Yeah, yeah. Campazzo, I put together like another diary type thing and of the weekend. And Campazzo I described as J.J. Barea on bath salts. Because yep. He was just like, there was something superhuman about that dude. I can't wait to watch him against the U.S. because he was coming up big. And Manu, you know, like, I feel like he's sort of struggled, but like he's going to come to play on Wednesday.
Oh, for sure. And he had a play yesterday, a full court alley-oop pass. He didn't even look. He just kind of turned and chucked it probably 80 feet in the air right on a dime to somebody. It's like, boy, I mean, he's still the genius when he wants to be. The shot might be deserting him a little bit. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I mean, even at this age, he's really, really fun to watch, and he can make passes and plays that hardly anybody else in the world can make.
Yeah, the Argentinians are definitely going to be the lovable underdog Wednesday. I mean, they're all so old, like
really old.
Shouldn't even be playing in these Olympics.
Older after than
the
us.
After the Brazil game, Scola. It was either Scola or Delfino was joking about them playing in Tokyo 2020. And like, it's just hard not to love these guys because they have no reason to be here.
For sure. And I think, you know, Zach Lowe's piece about just their overall culture development from, you know, being teenagers until now, I think was excellent and really gave a good, you know, kind of a window into their chemistry and the kind of stuff that you can't just kind of slap together. And I think it makes a great contrast with Team USA, because if there's one huge knock on Team USA right now, it's the continuity factor, right? It's like these guys are just kind of thrown together in the gym. They're not practicing a lot. There's not a ton of flow on offense. Guys aren't making each other better. And then defensively, there's just so many communication breakdowns, so many easy points given up. You know, the team defensive stuff that we kind of expected to be there and that they really hyped up themselves just hasn't been there. And so that's why I'm a little bit nervous for Team USA, because you're going to potentially have to play, like if they play Argentina and then Spain and then say like Croatia or Lithuania, or even if they have to play Australia again, I mean, all of those teams, you know, camaraderie, togetherness, you know, shared experience. I would say all of those teams really kind of share that as a strength. And the United States doesn't. And if that's going to be sort of the contrast that we're looking for here in the knockout round, sort of talent versus continuity, you know, the USA is pretty clearly by itself on one pole.
Yeah, man, for sure. Before we talk USA, that Zach piece with Manu, my favorite detail in there was, did you read the part where they stole the they stole his ball after the 2004 Olympics.
Yeah, it wasn't Nocioni was saying that he didn't want to, he couldn't pass a lie detector test about it or something.
Yeah, that was just amazing. That's after that anecdote, I can't help but root for these guys to win everything. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you're not really like a fan one way or the other, but like I don't feel a huge connection to this American team. And like I think I'm just like sort of ambivalent with in terms of like the personnel. It's just not a fun group to root for.
You know what's really kind of bugging me is some of their recent comments too. Like they're almost like setting themselves up for an out if they lose with some of these things. Like, oh, we thought we would come in here and blow everybody away. You know, Durant saying something along the lines of, you know, it's not going to be a 20-point win every single time like it was these last few times. We're just not that team, or this is not just not that tournament. I don't like that mentality at all. I mean, I don't know if they feel like something's fundamentally broken and they can just feel it on the court. They're kind of hedging against these gigantic expectations. I don't know if they're just feeling the loss of, you know, a guy like Chris Paul, who's such a good organizer and kind of keeps everybody on track and gets the most out of them. I don't know if they're just sort of bored and didn't realize how long this whole thing would take. I don't know if they just are having so much fun not playing the games. They don't want their entire experience to be defined, you know, if they do somehow get upset. I don't know if they're nervous, but some of these comments coming out from them are strange and just totally different than what we expected, you know, during that, you know, pre-Olympics tour where they're just smoking everybody and confidence is riding high. And it seems like, you know, they're not even going to be challenged. So I don't know. I think that kind of feeds into what you're talking about, where not a really strong connection between the team and the viewers. I mean, number one on the court, it hasn't been very pretty. Hasn't been very entertaining. And really, they got bailed out a little bit by the three-pointers. If Melo doesn't go nuts against Australia and Clay doesn't go nuts,
oh, yeah.
What was it, against Serbia?
France.
France, sorry, you're right. Then, you know, that streak could be over, and we could already be talking about, like, the biggest disappointment of the summer, right? So I think it kind of all goes together, but stylistically and then in terms of quality of play, I mean, both those things have been pretty disappointing. And I guess at this point, if you're a big fan of Team USA, you're just hoping that they have another gear that they can turn on, especially defensively. If they can just ratchet things up, everybody pays attention for three games, you know, there's still a chance that they can, you know, run away with this thing. But we haven't seen that extra gear yet.
Yeah, I mean, I like, the one thing is they have so much talent and so much athleticism that I wouldn't really worry about it one way or another. I think that they'll have enough to survive, but it's definitely going to be much closer than we thought. Let's go through like the three biggest problems with Team USA right now. I'll start. I think Kyrie Irving is the issue. I think they need a point guard, and the reason that a lot of times the offense feels like last year's like Thunder, the worst of the Westbrook Durant Thunder, is because Kyrie is in that Westbrook role and doesn't really know how to balance things. And it's too bad also because Kyrie, like, he hasn't gotten in the rhythm as a scorer either. And so, like, the whole offense is off. Kyrie isn't playing that well, and it just, there's no flow. Like, they need Chris Paul.
Yeah, the offense is struggling in a couple different ways. I mean, I think number one, when they do try to do the entry stuff into guys like Boogie especially, they're not really getting a lot out of it. Part of it is that the FIBA referees are seemingly out to get Boogie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got so many traveling calls, offensive foul calls, you know, turnovers trying to pass through traffic. And I think some of it is just that there's it's a little bit tighter because the three-point line's shorter, so it's a little bit easier to dive down onto, you know, post-up guys. And so, you know, the ball is going into Boogie and it's not really producing a lot of points. So they're not really able to play that inside outside game that you would like. And then so that now sets up a situation where the guys on the perimeter feel like they have to do a little bit too much one on one. I think Kyrie's been guilty of that, but I really don't think he's the only person on that list. I'd also, you know, Paul George was talking about how easy the USA has been to defend because they're doing so much, you know, one on five. Well, Paul George, you're doing a lot of one on five. You know, I mean, look in the mirror there. And then also, there's been a real weird balance with Kevin Durant, too. It's like he waits and waits and waits and never touches the ball. And then once he finally gets it, you know, he starts doing some of the one on five, you know, trying to handle and break his guys down off the dribble. And that hasn't been super successful, too. So yeah, there's been, the flow is certainly a big time issue. And I think there's a couple different reasons for it. I wouldn't put it all on Kyrie's shoulders, but I do think if you had a Chris Paul, a lot of these issues would just not be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying Kyrie shouldn't be on the team or anything, but they just need a true point guard to sort of make this all work. And without that, like, I don't even think Kyle Lowry is really that guy, because he's sort of a shoot first guy too. And it's showing. Next issue. I don't know whether this is about the Snapchat dick pic, but Draymond should be playing more. And because you said, like, Boogie is about to snap on the FIBA refs and has just been kind of a mess for the last 10 days. DeAndre Jordan is not very skilled, does not fit that well with the international game. But we're talking about a team that A, needs a creator, and B, like, the other big men are not great options right now. Why isn't Draymond Green starting and playing 30 minutes a game?
Well, I think the shorter answer is because he sucked too. You know, just to be real frank, I mean, I think he's had a really bad summer. I mean, not just the off the court stuff, but you even go back to the, you know, the pre-Olympics tournament when they're playing teams like China. This guy was a mess. I mean, he's throwing the ball over the court, not really doing the playmaking, crisp playmaking that we've come to expect from him on the Warriors, not producing a lot of points for himself, and then not playing necessarily, you know, consistent elite defense. Now, we have seen some pretty good flashes defensively from him during the Olympics, but you know, I'm just not sure Coach K knows how to use him really. And I'm not sure a guy like, you know, Kyrie Irving, if you're putting him into those high screen and rolls, and he doesn't have those hundreds of reps that Steph has in those situations where you are trying to exploit and get the ball to Draymond and let him be the facilitator. If you don't have point guards who are used to that, then they just look at Draymond coming up to setting a screen as almost any other big coming up to set a screen. So I think they're definitely underutilizing Draymond Green, but I think a lot of that falls on his shoulders. I don't think he's been very good
at
all.
That's fair.
During this tournament. Like, and that's a big problem, because what you're saying is, where do they get better production from their bigs? Like, if DeMarcus Cousins is frustrated, if DeAndre Jordan's just not capable of being a playmaker, I mean, he's a dunker on offense and a solid rim protector on defense. That's sort of his role. If he doesn't have a point guard who can kind of get the most out of him, which he doesn't, and, you know, DeMarcus, you know, it kind of seems at this point like they got to chill a little bit on how much they're giving him the ball, because it's just leading to lots of bad stuff going the other direction. If your only other option is Draymond, he's also not playing well, like, all of a sudden you're really up a creek.
Mello at the five. Let's do it. see what we can do. Yeah, I don't know, man. I agree with you that Draymond hasn't looked great. It just seems like he's never been really given a chance to get into a rhythm. Yeah. And you look at the other national teams, and they all sort of work it through the high post and turn defenses inside out that way. And for some reason, like, USA is watching these guys every night, and they can't stop these offenses. Like, there's constant movement. It starts at the high post, and they just sort of like back cut the U.S. to death. And I don't understand how you can watch this night after night and be like, oh yeah, we're gonna like still trust Kyrie to start the offense 35 feet from the hoop. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, I feel you. And the other reason why you would put Draymond out there is that we saw against France the difference that Klay Thompson playing at normal Klay Thompson levels, or even you know, a hot Klay Thompson level, has. And if you're trying to have somebody, you know, feed him the ball, you look at the roster, who's better at knowing where Klay wants it, when Klay wants it, than Draymond? And if he gets into one of those grooves, you know, that's a really good thing you can milk. I mean, I think Klay, you know, getting back on track was a huge X factor for them. And if he hadn't, I would be even more nervous about where USA's offense is going, because they got to have as much space as they can possibly get. I mean, it's kind of crazy that they've got Kyrie, Klay, Melo, and Durant on the court simultaneously, and they're still having spacing problems, but they really are. And I think Klay is the one who's sort of in position to take advantage of defenses loading up on some of those other guys. But, you know, he was just completely ice cold for the first four games, basically. So, I mean, you could try to milk that Draymond Klay connection a little bit too, and maybe get a little bit more out of both of them by playing them together. We'll see if they do that.
Yeah, my thing with Klay was that he was ice cold, but he also, like, everyone on Twitter was complaining about, like, the lack of shooting. Like, Klay is the second or third best shooter on earth, along with Durant and Steph. Like, the problem was that they weren't putting him in the game. Like, he had an awful 10 days to start the Olympics. But I also feel like Coach K, like, you got to recognize the roster. Like, there are not very many alternatives who can shoot like him. The only other guy really is Jimmy Butler. Paul George, theoretically a shooter, in practice, like, it has not necessarily been there.
Yeah, no, the drop off from Klay to the rest of the wings in terms of shooting is substantial. I mean, Jimmy, DeRozan, George are all not just those knockdown type guys you really want in catch and shoot situations. I also really feel like we're feeling the Steph effect here too, right? I mean, isn't everybody's life just so much more difficult because you don't have Steph Curry out there? I think that's certainly an explanation for why Draymond hasn't played as well as he usually does. And I think it's definitely an explanation for Clay struggles to a certain degree. I mean, you just get more open shots. You get shots that you're used to when you're playing with a guy like Steph, who you've logged, you know, thousands of minutes alongside. And yeah. You know, it was something that when Steph pulled out, I was kind of frustrated for, I think, the global basketball community in terms of what it meant. And I think also, I mean, his teammates, you know, his Warriors teammates got to be a little bit frustrated right now, too, because they're almost like being left out, you know, kind of hung out to dry a little bit.
I don't know about that. I think it would have been wild to see, because I think if Steph were here, you would have gotten to a place where the best USA lineup would have been four Warriors and Carmelo Anthony, which would have been pretty terrifying for the rest of the NBA. But I agree, this does heighten the appreciation of Steph as a player. And it's about time, you know. After the finals, he took a lot of shit, and he was the punchline. He was a punchline on the internet for about a month, and I guess still kind of is. But
as he should have been.
Yeah, yeah, sure, that's fine. But next to the rest of this roster, you can see how good he, because he would be able to play Kyrie's role and have it work naturally, and be a better shooter. And I don't know. That's exactly what the U.S. needs right now, which is tough.
Yeah. Well, and this is a great contrast with LeBron, right? Because it's so self-evident that LeBron makes all of his teammates better. And there's always this debate, well, that's why LeBron's a better player than Steph. And I think it's more difficult. It takes a little bit more investigation to see how a guy like Steph does make his teammates better. But, you know, the gravity issue in terms of how much defenses have to pay attention to him, the comfort actually running a sophisticated and well-oiled offense, the kinds of looks that he generates for his teammates. All those things are a little bit more difficult to see than sort of a cross-court no-look LeBron pass. But I think, you know, if Steph is underrated in any way, it's in the way that he makes his teammates better.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Steph Curry. We love you again. We miss you.
Please come back. We take everything back that we said during the finals.
That you said. I was straight up apologizing for Steph for
all
most
right.
of the finals.
All right, fine.
All right. Well, last USA issue. What about Coach K? I mean, I'm so biased. I don't like Coach K. Don't like how this how the Team USA stuff has like contributed to the softening of Coach K and the rebranding while also allowing him to like rejuvenate his program. So I'm biased. I need your take.
Well, I'm not advocating for a coup, but if Greg Popovich just kind of showed up and was the head coach in the quarterfinals, I'm not saying I would complain.
Yeah, right?
I don't know how much of this is about Coach K. I mean, I do think to a certain degree, a lot of the credit, you know, that he received through, you know, basically the start of his tenure with USA basketball through the 2012 Olympics, a lot of that credit really rightfully goes to the superstar guys. I mean, yeah. LeBron, Carmelo, I mean, those guys deserve the lion's share of the credit. And of course, someone's got to kind of mold them and keep those relationships going. And that's a coach's job, no doubt about
it. Well, not just that. I also think Jerry Colangelo deserves a ton of credit for making those relationships with those guys and recognizing that like those guys are how you restore USA basketball.
100%. But who gets more credit, Jerry Colangelo for doing that, for wanting LeBron James, or for LeBron James taking on the burden, you know, and actually doing it and giving up his time?
Yeah.
You know, and
oh,
I think
totally.
So if we're
I'm
gonna like
saying,
prioritize
if it's
who deserves
K and Colangelo,
the line,
yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if we're going to prioritize who gets the lion's share of the credit here, I think it's, you know, pretty obviously guys like LeBron, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, and we see what it looks like when they're not there. So from that standpoint, I think coaching is probably overanalyzed when we're looking at USA basketball, but we're not seeing a lot of adjustments that are making a meaningful impact here. And we're not seeing, I mean, how many guys on this roster right now can you say, like, he's definitely playing up to his potential? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would, some of the struggles that Boogie has had, for instance, like it would help to have a coach tweak things a little bit to use him maybe a little bit smarter, put him in positions where he's less prone to an offensive foul, or just like talk him through this and be like, listen, man, I know like the FIBA refs are tough, but like we're going to be okay. We really need you, because they do really need him. And I don't know. Maybe those conversations have happened, but it doesn't seem like there has been much of a difference with him or with most of these guys.
Yeah. The other thing that I look at is just effort defensively, effort and awareness, and sort of, you know, fulfilling your obligations as a team defense. That's always something that I look at in terms of, is the coach getting through to these guys? Do they have full buy-in? And that's why I'm wondering, like, are they just going to flip a switch here defensively and look like a totally different team in these last three games? Because it just hasn't been there for the first five games. And they have a lot of good individual defenders. None of these guys is logging huge minutes. The schedule is super friendly. They're getting all these days off. I mean, they have no excuse for why they shouldn't be playing much more attentive, much more focused, and much more imposing defense, both on and off the ball. So, you know, that's one thing where if they do lose, that's what I'm going to point to with Coach K, is like, he thought this was going to be this amazing defensive team, and it just hasn't been that. And sometimes that's just a matter of communication from coaching staff to players, and it's a matter of motivation. And I don't know, maybe these guys just aren't quite buying what he's selling like they have in previous years. You know, at the same time, you know, if they are able to turn it up, then he's going to look like a genius and everyone's going to hail him just like we have previously.
Yeah, I'm sure that will happen. And the rotations have been a little wonky too, but I guess you're right. It's either way, it's too early to judge. It wouldn't bother me entirely if the entire country turned on Coach K over the next 4 days. If that means that America has to lose, it might be worth it for me.
Well, here's one thing that I really had a problem with in that Australia game. I think you were at. I think it's like a one or two possession game late, and Klay Thompson's dribbling the ball up the court under ball pressure. Have we ever seen Klay Thompson take more than five dribbles in a row during the NBA? Yeah. I mean, that's pretty clearly a limited part of his game. and what happens, you know, he's stumbling and bumbling, falls over on the sideline, loses the handle, has to kind of barely avoid the turnover on the sideline, kind of, you know, flustered, and throws the ball back to one of his teammates before, you know, it's just a flat turnover and an empty possession. So situations like that where just know your personnel, Klay should not be bringing the ball up the court ever under crunch time situations. So you either got to get him out of there, or you have to have somebody else doing that. If they're trying to deny Kyrie the ball in those situations, you got to work harder to get him open. I mean, it just kind of seemed like pretty basic elementary stuff that they weren't doing late in game.
We need a point guard, man. We need Steph. We need John Wall. Bring in Damian Lillard, whatever.
Well, I do feel like we kind of called this, though, because I remember a podcast like a month ago where we said, like, there's going to be a time where Kyrie's going to have to step up and show he can kind of do this. And, you know, there were some flashes during that Australia game. You know, he hit the three. I think he had a you know, pretty nice runner where it's sort of like, okay, he can get this done with his own scoring. That's going to be his method to solve this. But that might not always work. And he's taken some really, you know, kind of crazy, you know, ugly banking shots that haven't worked. And then defensively, you know, he does give a lot back on the other end. So he's going to be up for some, you know, serious criticism if they don't get this done.
Yeah, well, the other guys on the floor generally are pretty solid defensively. But Kyrie, like theoretically at least, are solid defensively. They sort of have been falling off against these teams who are just constantly moving, but like they can get their shit together and lock people down, particularly in these metal games. Kyrie is always going to be a zero or a negative. And that's just the way they're going to have to live. So I don't know. What do you think? Let's move from Team USA. How well do you know the international teams?
No, fairly well. I mean, clearly the Spain-France matchup, I think, is the one that pops from the other NBA. Three games that are going to take place on Wednesday. It seems like Spain has kind of gotten it together a little bit. The fact that France was able to push the United States without Tony Parker, you know, to me, that was kind of a warning sign for the United States and probably heartening for the French, who maybe were a little bit shaky at times in the opening round, too. When I look at Spain-France, I still feel like that's Spain's game to lose. They do seem to start slow in some of these tournaments and then kind of turn things on a little bit. So, you know, to me, I guess if I had to handicap it, I would sort of expect the USA to kind of have to deal with Spain in the medal round.
Yeah, Spain looked really good last night. I forget who they played. I think it was Saturday. Their last two games, it's been like a different team. And that has got to be pretty scary for the U.S. because they've been struggling with teams who don't have anywhere near their talent. Spain has close enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a drop-off in terms of talent, but you can just make the counter-argument about continuity. Is it, you know, the Spanish guys, they can throw half-court alley-oops, you know, on a dime without looking because they've just been doing it for 8 or 9 years. I mean, you know, a guy like Rudy Fernandez can cut from the corner to the rim and get a pass right on the money from one of their point guards, and it happens before you even know it. So, you know, if you're a guy like Paul George or Jimmy Butler turning your head, I mean, they're going to make you pay very quickly. They're also a team that can really string together runs when the momentum is going, right? Like, they're not going to take their foot off the gas. They've got a few shooters, you know, who can kind of stack up some points. And then just more, Miritich. You know, bigger picture, I think that they just, you know, it's five guys playing as one, much more than the United States is at this point. And, you know, if it gets into a situation where it's a tight game late, you know, they've been able to push the United States in both, you know, the 2008 final and the 2012 final. You know, those teams had a lot of bailout options, whether it's LeBron, Kobe, you know, right down the list. I mean, USA's bailout options are Carmelo, which is a nice option to have. But if he's your only option, that's a little bit nerve wracking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kevin Durant, is he going to show up? I mean, I think that's sort of a big question. And if you want to go shot for shot late and you're playing 1-on-5 and Durant's trying to, you know, do the Oklahoma City Thunder thing and Spain is working their possessions to get good quality shots and, you know, passing and moving, you know, Spain's going to have a shot.
Yeah, well, and they're kind of like who the Sixers rookie is very good also. I think his name's Sergio Rodriguez.
Yeah, so he's not actually a rookie. He played for the Blazers like 5 or 6 years ago, and he was under Nate McMillan, which was a very interesting clash of personalities. So Nate's like this ultimate taskmaster disciplinarian. And Sergio Rodriguez is like the most freewheeling, like more Ricky than Ricky Rubio.
He's been fun. He's been fun.
No, so it was like the worst possible NBA fit for Sergio Rodriguez because this guy just wants to throw an alley-oop and no look pass and, you know, white chocolate it basically. I guess Spanish chocolate was his nickname. and so his NBA career died very quickly. I think he might have had a cup of coffee with the Knicks too before he went back to Spain, but he has really developed a lot, you know, during the course of his prime. And, you know, now he gets to have another, you know, another run through the NBA. But yeah, he's a legit player. I mean, he's an NBA quality player. No question.
He's very legit. Miritich can shoot internationally. I don't know if he will ever be able to shoot in the NBA, but he is a good guy, a good sort of swing man to stretch things a little bit for them. And like, they're just a cut above the other teams, I think, in terms of the talent that they can throw at America and then whoever else. I mean, so do you have plans for Wednesday?
Yeah, I'll be watching 8 hours of basketball. That's my plan.
Gonna wake up at like what, 8 a.m. California time?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think it's actually four pretty good games, honestly.
It's going to be great. Like I leave Thursday. I'm going back for a wedding in the States. So I'm missing the semifinals and finals this weekend. Or I'll watch on TV.
Like I would give you a lot of crap about that, but I don't even have the heart at this point. Like I know what you're struggling through right now.
It's been too long in Rio, man. It hurts to miss those medal games, but I'm ready to go back. It's been like the past weekend I went and saw like as many events as possible, and it was so cool. Like we can talk about that next week, a little Rio memories. But I'm now like, all right, I've got one day of 12 hours of basketball, and it's gonna be incredible, and then I'm ready to hit the road.
Well, so what else has been going on since we last talked? I mean, any big highlights? I love the talk from the road. I mean, I saw your Venezuela story. That was pretty interesting and seemed like you kind of went above and beyond on who you were talking to get background details for that. Do you want to tell us about that story? Or
yeah, the Venezuela story. Basically, group play was winding down, and there are a couple people I had talked to down here who we were just talking about how crazy it was that Venezuela was playing in the middle of like a national hunger crisis and the political infrastructure is completely in flux, and like there's just like profound struggles in that country right now. And while everybody had been freaking out about Rio, it was like Venezuela is 10 times worse, 10 times more unstable, and people are really, really like Rio is in the middle of a recession, but I mean, like Caracas in Venezuela is in the middle of basically, this is like a humanitarian situation where like people can't eat. There's armed guards going with food trucks because they've got like people are trying to rob these trucks, and it's just chaos. And so we just went over one night and we're like, let's just see if we can talk to some of the Venezuelan guys about this. And a couple of players had some interesting things to say. And then we found a Venezuelan outside the stadium who was real forthcoming about the situation and why it's complicated for those guys, for the players to even say things, because like the government is fairly oppressive, the socialist government in Venezuela. And so it was just sort of, it was like the one non- I'm down here screwing around and having fun story. And it was really interesting to talk to those guys.
Yeah, that was it was pretty nuts. Your point about the kind of humanity that you're able to pull from even a team like that, where you've just got endless stories of different life experiences around the world, was, I thought that was really good. I enjoyed it. Everyone should read it. That was my mandatory Andrew Sharp from the Rio Olympics plug alert.
Thank you. Yeah, man. Well, it's crazy because the Venezuela stuff is so easy to ignore when it's just sort of like out. Like, I knew that there was political unrest. I had no idea until coming down here and seeing them and seeing the team in person and then talking to people about Venezuela. I had no idea the extent of the issues that they're dealing with. And it was eye-opening to see how bad it's gotten.
Yeah, no, that piece hit me too, because I'm over here like calculating with spreadsheets, like, you know, USA's point differential, average margin of victory, you know, and it's like you just plug Venezuela in, it was like a 50-point loss or something like that, and they're just sort of a number, and it's just another team that's getting stomped. And then you realize like, oh yeah, well, there might be a few explanatory causes for, you know, that margin of victory and the kinds of situations that they're dealing with back home. So I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, well, and it's cool that they actually, it's such a huge step for them to even be here. So it doesn't even, like, I think the Venezuelans I talked to, like, I talked to Kobe's cousin, John Cox, and he was pretty funny about it. He was like, it's a tough field, man. Like, the Americans, they had just lost to France by 40, and like that France is pretty stacked as well. So they were all, they had no illusions about what was possible. But they were all playing hard, which was cool.
That's awesome. So, well, what else has been going on? Any other like crazy highlights, things that we should be, you know, worried about, things that would scare your mom from the last like, you know, week or so?
I'll save it for, we'll do a pod Monday and I'll collect some memories. I was at the 100 meters on Sunday night. I saw Phelps's last race on Saturday. There's just like, I basically took the weekend off from basketball and it explored and tried to see as much as I could. And it was fantastic. I came away like a full on Olympics evangelist. So yeah, it's been good. And now we got Wednesday. I feel like we should wrap things up with some picks here.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Croatia, Serbia.
Ooh, that's tough. I think I'll go Croatia. Going into that game yesterday, I kind of thought Lithuania would beat them.
Yeah, me too.
But they also just kind of caught fire. And, you know, another one of these teams that, like, once the momentum is behind them, they just ride it and ride it and ride it. You know,
dude, they are impossible to predict.
Yeah, no, it really is difficult. But, you know, Serbia to me wasn't super impressive, even though they really gave the United States a hard time. Yeah. So I also think like Jumpman, like it's hard not to like pick for the team that's got the dopest jerseys in the Olympics of any sport. And
yeah,
They also have, I think they're like maxed out on personalities too. So I think everybody's better off the longer that Croatia's in this tournament.
Nothing has ever been more perfect than Mario Hezonja being sponsored by Jordan Brand.
No doubt.
Like Jordan Brand, I don't know. I mean, maybe you feel differently, but their products like modern day are so tacky and obnoxious, and their stuff is tacky and obnoxious in exactly the same way that Hezonja is obnoxious. And I love it. It's like a match made in heaven with them.
So Australia versus Lithuania, that one might be the toughest one to pick, honestly.
Yeah.
I like Lithuania a lot. Like I thought they were going to beat Croatia. So I thought they were going to be the one seed. And I thought it was going to be a situation where like the USA had to sort of answer all its questions by beating Argentina, the last team to beat it, you know, in the Olympics, then beating Spain, who pushed them in the last two finals, and then beating Lithuania, who gave them the closest game in the 2012 Olympics. I think it was 5 points in the opening round. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I was kind of impressed by Australia and what they were able to do against the United States. That's like almost a pick 'em to me. I don't really know where I sit on that one. Maybe I'll go with Lithuania. I could just love their fans. I'm such a sucker for their fans with the crazy face paint and the hair and all that. I'll go Lithuania.
I don't like their fans.
Well, that's because you haven't been invited into the club. I mean, it's pretty clearly a jealousy issue.
Maybe. They also, I don't know if you hear it on TV, but they have these like obnoxious noisemakers.
Vuvuzelas?
No, they're not vuvuzelas. They're like kind of like air horn type things. And I don't feel safe when I hear those in the stadium. And I also feel like that's cheating. Like the Argentinians don't need like extra devices to be the loudest people in Rio. The Brazilians don't need that. The Lithuanians are gaming the system here. So,
well, they're daring you to take those things away from them, and you're afraid. I mean, period.
I guess I definitely am afraid. You're right. But I am going with Australia in that game. I'm kind of upset with you for not picking them out of loyalty to my loyalty for Delhi.
Well, honestly, I knew you were going to pick them. I'm just trying to spice this up.
All right, good. Yeah, thank you. And for in the first game, I think I'm going to take Serbia. You took Croatia?
I took Croatia, yeah.
Yeah, Serbia's point guard, Teja Dosic.
He's really, really, really good.
He's so much fun to watch. Like, that dude is so creative. And then you throw in Jokic. Jokic was the best player on the floor against America for like an extended period of time, like a quarter and a half. He was just better than anyone else out there.
Yeah, it was weird when Coach K at halftime was like trying to slip him a passport and a jersey. It was sort of like, wait a minute here. Are you trying to recruit this guy?
Send Boogie out to Serbia.
Yeah. No. Yeah, you can't go wrong either way. That's what I do like about this field, though. We got 8 really interesting teams. Like, there's a story with every single one of these teams. Yeah. And there's, you know, an NBA connection with basically all of them, I think, too. So from that standpoint, like if you're just a casual viewer, which why in the hell would you be listening to this podcast if you were a casual viewer? But if you were a casual viewer, you've got something here in all 4 matchups.
Yeah, no, it'll be great. So we've disagreed on the first 2. Spain, France.
I'm going to take Spain. Mostly because I think that they were underperforming in their first couple games. I think they turned it on, you know, quite a bit. I think they've got more overall talent. I think France's depth is pretty shaky. Parker being back should make them look better than they did against the United States. I'm always wary like of relying on Nicolas Batum in big game situations. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not.
It's a great Portland take.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's been a recurring theme for him for France, too. I mean, he's had some unbelievable performances for them, and he's also had like complete no-shows, like 0.0 rebounds, 2 assist type games in pretty important situations in various international tournaments. So I just kind of like the idea that Spain's got more guys they can turn to. But that is a really, really, really fierce rivalry. I mean, you were talking about Argentina and Brazil. I mean, Spain and France is right there. You remember the nut punch? I mean, that was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was one of the bigger international incidents in recent sports history. So I'm sure that they'll be chatting about that before the game.
Shit. The sequel to the nut punch.
Yep, we're back.
Who was it? Wait, who was it that Batum hit?
I think it was Juan Carlos Navarro.
Oh, man. Wow. I can't believe I overlooked that angle to this game. So you don't think Spain's going to get revenge for the nut punch?
Oh, I do think they are. Oh, I think they're going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely... France just doesn't have quite enough. Like, if Batum were more consistent, it would be easier to pick them. Boris is my guy, always will be. But Tony Parker has like, they just don't have... Like, Tony Parker isn't going to be able to do enough. So I agree with you. Spain will advance. Then that sets up a USA-Spain semifinal, which would be very intense. So USA-Argentina, clearly I'm picking USA.
Yeah, after ripping them for half an hour, I'll also take USA. I think it's one of those situations where Argentina's victory here was... that amazing game against Brazil, advancing, you know, one more show for the road. And then, you know, you kind of run into a brick wall of a team that's significantly more talented, much younger, more athletic. I think that they're going to have trouble getting to the rim as consistently as they did in the early round games against the United States. Even though the United States' defense hasn't been great, there's just a lot more length and athleticism there. And if, you know, the United States can find a way to kind of control their point guards, drives, I think that's going to take away a lot of the other stuff. So, defensively, I just think they're, you know, United States is a nightmare matchup for these guys as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, in case the first 20 minutes of this podcast didn't make it clear, I love Campazzo and I'm not big on Kyrie, but the Americans should be fine, at least on Wednesday. I think things could get pretty dicey against the rest of this bracket, but you know, we ripping on them for 30 minutes and then picking them is a good tribute to this underwhelming but still dominant Team USA this summer.
No question. And also, we get to take credit, too, if they turn it around. Because, you know, it was our motivational speech.
Yeah, and if they don't turn it around, then Coach K takes the blame. So
we were right.
Everybody wins.
It's perfect.
all right, man. Well, yo, I got to run, but let's talk Monday afternoon. Are you around?
I should be around. You know, take care. Stay safe. You're almost to the finish line. I feel like I'm giving you a pep talk right now because
you're a parent right now.
I just need you to dive across the finish line. Get that gold.
Yeah, I'll do what I can, man. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.